the Euro Exposition from local TV.
Good afternoon, hello, and welcome to the Euro Exposition podcast, the official podcast on the local TV network for the Euro 2020 tournament. And yesterday, it was, of course, the final of Euro 2020. England losing on penalties to Italy 3-2. It was an absolutely, you know, devastating penalty shootout to watch. We've got a few usual suspects in here. We've got David, we've got Joe, we've got Taryn, and we've got Dan. David, I'll come to you first, mate. How are you doing? And what did you think of the England performance and the game as a whole?
I think it was exactly how I sort of said it'd go on the preview podcast. It was the opening few minutes that was key to the whole game, and we said that England are going to want to get that first goal. It'd be looking to counter-attack. Obviously, England get the first goal, and then it was quite nervy. I think Italy went on to pretty much dominate from probably 20, 25 minutes, half an hour onwards. And, you know, England just tried their best to hold on, and I don't think it was the right thing to do. But as you say, it was that opening couple of minutes that really sort of put the game into the way it did. I think if it had that goal not have gone in for England, or if Italy would have scored, you'd have seen a very different game. But obviously that's exactly what England wanted. They just couldn't get it over the line in the end.
Definitely. I think, yeah, without that goal early on, we probably could have lost it in 90 minutes, the way that Italy played in the second half especially. Joe, come to you next. You know, how are you doing? It was a very disappointing performance, I think, after all things said. But what did you think of the way England played?
Yeah, I'm very somber this morning, just like the rest of the country, but proud of the lads with the way they performed in the tournament. But yeah, like you say, when it went to penalties, I just had a feeling that I didn't have a very good feeling about it, basically. You could see that Italy began to become on top in the second half, and they looked like they could like really start to break us down at any point they wanted to, really. The lads looked a bit leggy, and perhaps some of that was a mental block as well. But yeah, I wasn't really confident when it went to penalties. And yeah, it's just a shame that we went out that way, really, because it's a cruel way to lose. And I do feel sorry for the young lads who missed, but they can hold their heads high that they've made the tournament, that they've made the fans proud, sorry.
Definitely, I think they can, like you said, hold their heads high. It was really, like I said before, quite a disappointing penalty shootout, after all things said. Taryn, come to you next. You're not a massive fan of Southgate, but, you know, looking at the whole tournament, are you proud of England?
Definitely. I mean, end of the day, we've got to a final, you know, the second final that we've had in, you know, 55 years. So it's a momentous occasion at the end of the day, and you've got to respect the team and the players for getting us that far. And it's brought so much joy to the nation and to the country. And, you know, it's done so much in terms of the next generation of footballers in this country. You know, there'll be so many players tonight, you know, so many young kids that stayed up to watch that match, and they'll wake up today feeling upset and sad, but at the same time, they'll have an extra appreciation and love for football. And I think for me, that's a beautiful thing. And all things aside, all loyalties and emotions aside, you've got to be thankful for the fact that, you know, we've been able to see and experience the fact that England have come to a final that so many of us hadn't ever seen in our lifetimes before.
Yeah, it was really nice, I think, to see everyone sort of coming together. Well, the majority of people coming together and really just enjoying the time, you know, that we spent in the tournament. Of course, getting to a final, it's never happened in any of our lifetimes before. And, you know, even in a lot of people who are a bit older, their lifetimes as well. Dan, coming to you next. It was a bit of a weird performance, I think, from England. What did you think of the way that they played?
Yeah, I think the early goal, I actually think England started quite nervy. I think Harry Maguire passed the ball straight out for a corner in the first sort of minute. And it was quite a frantic start. And I think the early goal might have acted against England in the long run, because it kind of set the game up so that England just defended. And it allowed Italy to completely dictate pretty much from that point on. England had moments in the first half, but second half, Italy were just flying. I mean, England couldn't get out. They were clearing the ball. Harry Maguire, again, hate to single him out twice, but I think he was passing to the linesman a couple of times. He was just pinging balls like up the field to absolutely no one. And Italy were just flying at them, and the goal was always coming. It looked on the card 5 minutes before it happened, and then even after that, Italy could have probably won it in 90 minutes, I'd say, and it took a while for England to even get a grip again. So best two teams in the tournament for me in the final, and probably the best team in the final won it for me.
Yeah, I think you always sort of say, oh yeah, I think England's going to win. It's a bit biased, but after the first game of the tournament, you sort of looked at the way that Italy played against Turkey and you think, yeah, they're definitely going to at least get to the final, if not win it. David, coming to you, mate, the tactics that, you know, were put in place by Gareth Southgate, I think maybe just a bit wrong. We're sat back from about four, well, from the second half onwards until that goal came. And then, you know, we didn't really make any changes until after that Italy equaliser was scored. What do you think of the way that we were tactically yesterday?
So tactically, I mean, he gets it absolutely spot on to start with, because England get the early goal, which is exactly what they needed. But then it's from that, you could argue the first half England looked comfortable in terms of holding Italy off. Italy never really in that first half looked like breaking England down, partly because they had 11 men behind the ball, which is obviously very difficult to break down, but you can't rely on that for an entire game of football. And as Dan says, you've seen it coming. You've seen it coming a mile off. And I think where he's got it wrong is he hasn't adapted. He hasn't changed it. I think you've got to give him credit. He's got it right throughout the tournament. There's been a lot of criticism of picking certain players. And even yesterday, there was a little few murmurs about Trippier coming in and going back to the three at the back and things like that. He got it right to start with. But then it just... You can't rely on holding other teams off. You need to have something about yourself. And England just didn't seem like they had that much. They weren't really participating in the game almost from the second half. They were just allowing Italy to control it and dominate it and hoping for the best. So I just think that's where he should have maybe changed something. Maybe, I don't know, he left it too late. Obviously, Italy can score and England have conceded. And then he takes a third centre-back off. And it's so much more open. And then you're asking for trouble. It was kind of forced into the end. They didn't concede the second. There's just something about it. Maybe it was maybe bring one of the defensive midfielders off. You've probably got enough there to stay solid with three centre-backs and a defensive mid. Maybe take one of the defensive midfielders off. Put someone up front. I think they were crying out for a bit of pace up front. I think there was one time, was it Saka, got past Chiellini and he ragged them down. They didn't do enough of that. He didn't do enough of that in the second half. That's how England should have played it. I think they were trying to play on the counter-attack, but they didn't have enough pace up front to really cause problems.
It really reminded me of the Croatia game at the World Cup in Russia. You know, an early goal and then sort of sitting back and just soaking in a lot of pressure until, obviously, they equalised. And then, obviously, in this game, just missing that extra time goal before losing on penalties. Joe, coming to you next. You know, it seemed like Italy had us figured out at halftime. What would you have done differently if you were in Gareth Southgate's shoes? I know it is an absolutely impossible job at times, but in hindsight, what do you think could have been done better?
Well, personally, I thought Kieran Trippier had a good game, and with penalties in mind, I think it was a late substitution, was it, where he brought on Saka. I wouldn't have put that amount of pressure on a 19-year-old lad like that. Kieran Trippier absolutely smashed the penalty in against Colombia 3 years ago when we won the shootout, and he's obviously excellent at set pieces. So I would have kept an experienced head on like that. I mean, the cross for the first goal was unreal. I thought he was having a good game, but obviously, like you say, we're not in the manager's shoes, and it's very easy to say these things once they've happened.
And Taron, obviously, once again, we look in hindsight. I think even after the equaliser, Gareth Southgate was always looking towards penalties. Do you think he made the right changes at the right time?
No, not at all for me. I think, for me, all tournament, I've said Grealish needs to start every single game, and he hasn't done that. I think he's got an obsession with Mount. And, you know, don't get me wrong, Mason Mount is a really good player, but he's not a winger. And in the formation we were playing yesterday, he didn't belong in there for me. I think he says that Grealish doesn't have the work rate that Mount does, but, you know, at the end of the day, the things that Grealish offers, nobody else in that England team can offer. And the Italians had earmarked Grealish as, you know, one of the star players. And I think as soon as he came on, there was fear in the Italians. You know, all they wanted to do was boot him down, kick him down and just try and force him off the pitch, really. And I think, you know, the substitutions, Rashford and Sancho, I don't understand why, you know, you're bringing on two lads that have barely played all tournament, Saka as well, you know, a young lad. who's played well, but at the same time, they haven't had the experience at this level. They haven't played that much this tournament. Then to expect them to score in the penalty shootout, I think it was too much to ask in the end. And the substitutions were too little too late. You know, if you want to win a game, you've got to win it in 90 minutes. There's no point, you know, when players are really trying to bust the gut to get backwards and forwards in extra time, there was no point to bring on players there. So for me, it was poor management from start to finish.
And we've had a couple of comments just in the chat. Be sure to put your opinions in on what you thought of the game. We've had one from Christine saying hello from Brisbane in Australia. And then we've got Danielle saying, thoughts for Italia, well done to England and a valiant effort. Well, unfortunately, valiant efforts don't win you the Euros. In Italy, I think we're the better team at the end of the day. Dan, we were speaking beforehand just about, you know, the tactics and the way England played in the second half. And you said he could really tell that the goal was coming, the equaliser was coming for Italy. You know, what did you think of that second half? It was a very, I think, nervy half of football to watch.
Yeah, it was. I just think England and Southgate waited for it to happen. I don't think he was proactive whatsoever in making the change. If you look at Mancini on the other side, he brought Barella off, I think, sort of after 50-odd minutes, brought Verratti off a little bit later, brought Immobile off a little bit later. He made big decisions. He was making changes that he thought were going to impact the game, whereas Southgate just waited for the game already to be impacted, and then he thought, OK, now I've got to do something. Italy absolutely bossed that midfield. Like I think we all thought they would. Declan Rice had a really good game and Phillips had a really good game individually. But in terms of actually controlling the ball, Italy just dominated. Jorginho, Verratti and then Insigne in the middle. That triangle was just incredible, I thought, second half. England couldn't get near him. And Southgate had to do something about that. And it would have been a formation change and Henderson coming on probably a little bit earlier. Or Grealish earlier, like we've touched upon, to try and get England up the field and get hold of the ball. Because like I said before, it wasn't really Harry Maguire's fault that England couldn't get out and he was just hitting aimless balls. There was nowhere to go. There was no way of getting out. And someone like Grealish, or like Dave touched upon, someone with pace behind. Because all the talk in the week was about how the wingers of England, Sterling, etc., could get behind Chiellini and Bonucci. It happened once in 120 minutes. And Chiellini had to drag him back and it was a booking. So for me, Southgate was just naive, thinking it was going to be okay and you could hang on. You can't hang on for 88 minutes in a footy match against a side like Italy. You have to do something about it. And he had chances at half-time to do it and he didn't. And he had a chance in the second half to do it and he didn't. And Mancini, you know, Premier League winning manager, elite manager, was making changes to change the game, even though Italy were on top. And that just shows you the difference in calibre we're talking about.
Yeah, I think definitely, once again, in hindsight, there is a lot to learn from that final. Dave, just coming to you before we move on to the penalty shootout. Chiellini, we've mentioned him before, when Saka got through, it was literally the last minute of the game, literally pulled his shirt and almost choked him down. Do you think that was worthy of a yellow, or do you think that should be a straight red?
No, it's not a red card. I mean, if he's probably 20 yards further up the pitch and he's near the goal, then, you know, it's unquestionable. But it's on the halfway line pretty much. And he's, you know, OK, Saka's going to get behind Chiellini, but there's loads of players covering. That's just like, you know, I've been there, I've done that. Someone's just completely done you and you're going, well, you've done me, but you're not going to do anyone else. And you just drag them back. You know, it's a yellow card all day long. And I think he was quite happy to accept it was a yellow card. Not more than a yellow for me, though.
Maybe my emotions are just a little bit too high still. I remember watching it at the time, I was going, that's a red card!
Yeah, you're sucked into the game there, mate. Yeah, no way.
I think it might have had to be, like, every time someone went down, I was like, that's a free kick, that's a penalty, that's something. I think it would be good to talk about the referee today, because I think, and I'm not being biased here, maybe he was just a little bit inconsistent with fouls and cards. Joel, I'll come to you on this. What did you think of the referee's performance?
Yeah, I tend to agree there. I definitely think it could have been a red. And Locatelli, was it? Did he go studs up on?
Jorginho.
That was Jorginho and Grealish. Yeah.
Grealish, that was a horrendous challenge. So, but these referees, they've got to remain calm and stay by the decisions, haven't they? They can't be seen to be favouring one side or the other. So at the end of the day, they have a difficult job. And Bone Kuipers is an experienced referee, so I'm sure he was happy with his performance.
And we've had another comment in here from Joseph, and he said the referee was man of the match. So I feel like, I think I do agree, it was very sort of inconsistent, the performance of the referee, but we are always going to have divided opinions. Taryn, coming to you now, we're going to talk about the penalty shootout, and I think this is sort of like the big story of the match. The first five penalty takers, we had Harry Kane, Harry Maguire, both absolutely smashing their penalties in, probably, you know, two of the best penalties we'll ever see in the Euros. No, I'm kidding. And then we had Rashford, Sancho, and then Saka on the other three. All three of them missed their penalties. The two people, Sancho and Rashford, they'd only be on the pitch, what, less than 5 minutes? And they're getting told to take a penalty in, you know, one of the first five penalties in the penalty shootout. You know, what did you think of that decision? And do you think it was right for them to even have been on the pitch there? Or would you have just left someone who maybe have had a little bit more experience on there on the pitch in that final?
I mean, I think, you know, the players have said that, you know, that they were all willing to take penalties, I imagine. And I know Southgate said that he picked the players to take the pens. But for me, in that circumstance, you know, it's a final. To bring on three players, you know, who aren't experienced, number one, who haven't sort of lived the game. I think for me, in a penalty shootout, if you've been part of the game, it sort of eases your nerves a bit, you know, because you feel like I've come this far, you know, this isn't the biggest hurdle in the match. Whereas if you've sat on the bench and you've spectated, you know, for 90 plus minutes, I think it adds a lot more pressure because you think this is my biggest involvement. And I think for Rashford and Sancho, that's what it was. It was, you know, they didn't get on the pitch for that long. That penalty was their purpose to come onto the pitch, you know. Southgate takes off Henderson for Rashford, so you know exactly what his purpose is, you know, to take the penalty. So I think it was just disappointing for me. You know, I know that Southgate's done a really good job, but I just can't get over the fact that, you know, a 19-year-old is stepping up to take the most crucial penalty for England in you know, so long. And it's devastating, really. But, you know, you can't really put the blame on the players at the end of the day. You know, they're doing their jobs. But yeah, at the same time, it is really heart-wrenching.
Yeah, I think the whole tournament, I think every sort of decision that has been made by the management and the coaching team has been, you know, as good as it could be, just up until, you know, the last 5 minutes of the game and then the subsequent penalty shootout, choosing that then people for the first five. Dan, I'll come to you next. Jack Grealish was apparently 10th in the lineup for penalty takers and not in the first five. Do you think that was a bit of a silly decision?
That's madness, isn't it? To have him behind, I'm always surprised when defenders step forward. I know we've seen Harry Maguire absolutely smash one in, but, you know, realistically, you want people who score goals more often than not to be taking penalties, I'd say, because when it all boils down to it, that's what you're there to do. You know, Jack Reese is an attacking player, very good technically. I know he takes set pieces for Villa. I just think it's another stick to beat Gareth Southgate with in terms of not liking or not fancying Jack Grealish. And I know he's denied it, and picking him in the squad has kind of played down those sort of talks, but there's definitely something there for me. And whether it's just because Jack Grealish is a bit of a luxury player in many ways. He's quite, you know, he's full of flair. He's very creative and he makes things happen. There's no doubt about that. But Southgate, the way he looks to set his teams up, they're quite industrious. Like Mason Mount is almost like a hybrid. He's nowhere near as creative and as attacking as like a Jack Grealish, but he does all the other stuff in terms of he'll work hard, he'll work back. And I'm not sure Grealish really wants to be doing that. And I think that's where the balance is. But to have Grealish, you know, one before the goalkeeper and seemingly behind the likes of Kyle Walker and others, who I'm sure we'll go into, is a really strange decision for me.
And Dave, I'm going to come to you next. Just Italy's penalties, I don't think were fantastic. And I think they definitely capitalised on, of course, us missing three penalties. Jordan Pickford saving two of Italy's penalties, Jorginho's and Belotti's. You know, what did you think of sort of Italy's penalty shootout as a whole?
I was very surprised Jorginho missed. The pressure certainly got to him, because I think you look at him taking penalties at any other stage and he does not look interested. He's just calm as you like. But his run-up was slightly different yesterday. He seemed to want to rush it and get it over and done with, and he missed. And I think the fact that if he misses the penalty, there's a good chance you're going to win that shootout. And it's harsh on Saka, but if he scores, I think England probably go on to win the shootout, because you'd put your house on Jorginho scoring the penalty out of all the players that stepped up. And I think the pressure got to him. So if it's getting to someone who takes penalties regularly and, you know, you've got an 18-year-old, 19-year-old lad stepping up after it, it's not great, is it, for them? If he's seeing Jorginho miss and he's stepping up, I just feel so sorry for Saka. But then you've got Belotti, as you say, who missed the penalty. Bernucci's was fantastic, to be fair. I just think, as you say, it's a real shock to see Jorginho miss, and England obviously didn't get the chance to capitalise on it.
And Donnarumma as well, you know, the man of the moment, really. Do you think, you know, it was, he saved them penalties on merit and he knew what was going to happen, he made himself big, well, as big as he already was, or do you think it was just a case of they were just bad penalties?
I think with Donnarumma, he's massive, isn't he? So I think You've really got to put yourself, you've got to put yourself out as England, you've got to put it in the corner. And unfortunately, I mean, you're never saving Harry Maguire's. That was a fantastic penalty. Don't care who you are. Harry Kane's was all right as well, to be fair, right in the corner. But the other three are just they're not right in the corner. If you give Donnarumma half a chance, he's probably going to save it. Pure size alone, you know, he's massive. So you've really got to get your penalty spot on to beat Donnarumma.
And now, moving on, I think it would probably be good to think sort of towards the future, because there is another a major tournament about a year away now in Qatar. I'll come to Joe on this one. Mate, do you reckon, you know, with what a lot of the England players experienced last night, they'll really sort of carry that into the next tournament?
Yeah, I do. I'm really confident going forward as an England supporter. As some of you know on here already, I'm a massive Southgate fan, and his ability to unite the country and that. I know that his tactics have been questioned, but I believe going forward, the future is bright for England. If you look on some of the websites which show the appearances of some of these players, some of them have got 150 appearances, 200 appearances by the age of about 24, and that will definitely stand them in good stead. You know, we've got Reece James and Mason Mount winning Champions League finals, Trent Alexander-Arnold doing so as well. So going forward, I think it's about positivity and not negativity. I know it hurts at the moment, but I believe with a few players like Chiellini and the German players probably retiring over the next few years, it could be our time to really make a dent in the international stage.
And once again, looking forward, Taryn, I'm going to come to you. Is there any players who you think maybe weren't at this tournament that you'd maybe look towards for another time?
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, England need to do a lot of learning, you know, before we get to the next tournament. I think the last, you know, obviously the World Cup and this tournament as well, it just seemed that the same errors kept, you know, occurring. We, you know, we get an early lead in a big game and it just seems that, you know, we fall away. I think midfield-wise, James Ward-Prowse may be an addition to the squad. He's, you know, industrious and set piece as well. You know, he's created, you know, the creativity, you know, you can't doubt that. But for me, Trent Alexander-Arnold needs to be in that England team. He offers so much down that right side. And I think to some extent, we missed that in this tournament. You know, maybe Southgate doesn't pick him, but at the end of the day, he offers so much in that position that, you know, it takes the burden off the attacking, you know, trio up top or the midfielders as well. So for me, I think you need players in that team that are willing to take the game by the scruff of its neck and say, I want to be the hero in this. That sort of arrogance a little bit. And I think that's what we're missing in the England team. It's just somebody who's going to say, well, I'm going to take responsibility here and change the game for us.
We've got a handful of Liverpool fans in this podcast. Dan, I'll come to you as one of them. Taryn did mention Trent Alexander-Arnold just there. Do you think with him in the lineup for the whole tournament, you know, if he didn't have that injury before the tournament started, it might have been a different result?
Possibly. I think it might have been a bit more entertaining, and that's not really to take anything away from the likes of Kyle Walker and Trippier, who played on that side, and Reece James a little bit, because they're all, you know, spoiled for choice, England. Let's have it right. Like, they're 3/4 top quality right backs. But Trent Alexander-Arnold's got something different, if you ask me. I'm not surprised Gareth Southgate isn't a massive fan. I think it kind of refers to the Jack Grealish conversation I had a minute ago in terms of Trent's a decent defender. Let's have it right. There's a lot of sort of detractors about his defensive work, but he is decent defensively. Is he as good as he is in attacking sense? Not even close, but his attacking ability is ridiculous. His quality on the ball is crazy. Like, you don't win and you don't get the assists that he's got in Champions League and Premier League at the age of 22 without being a proper player, and he is seriously good. England probably beat Scotland, I'd say, because he offers something completely different down the right-hand side and got creativity. Harry Kane is probably happier, I'd say, with Trent in the side because his delivery is better than the rest, as decent as Trippier probably is. But in terms of moving forward, England have got lots to be positive about with some of the players we've mentioned and the ages of some of the players we've mentioned. I think we need to be mindful of the fact that this is a Euros we've just watched and the Copa America has been going on, and Argentina and Brazil are pretty good as well.
That's very true. We've had a comment here from Russ just in regards to the penalties. He said, I'm surprised that Sterling and Grealish didn't take a penalty last night or weren't in the top seven. And his top seven would have been Kane, Maguire, Rashford, Sancho, Saka, Pickford, and then Philip. Oh, sorry, that would have been the top seven for the shootout, I believe. Dan, I believe you had a little bit of a stat about Raheem Sterling's appearances to penalties and penalties scored. Can you?
Yeah, 400 professional appearances, 4 penalties taken and 1 scored. And I know he's missed. He never took them for Liverpool, I can tell you that categorically. And I think he's missed all 3 for City. And I'm not really that surprised by that. I'm also not surprised he wasn't on him, because as good as a player he is, and he is a fantastic player, as much as I have my misgivings about him, a lot of his talent and ability is based on the fact he's really good running with the ball, he's rapid, and he has a knack of being in the right place at the right time. Do I think he's a fantastic, technical, ball-striking footy player? Nah, not at all.
And we've had another comment coming through from Nigel. It's a bit of a long read, but I think it is basically just Slate and Southgate and just saying we didn't have much of a backbone in this game. So I think there will be quite a lot of sort of fingers getting pointed towards Gareth Southgate. There are actually rumours as well of a new contract for him. So I think that the opinion on that will be split. But at the end of the day, we have just reached the final for the first time in, you know, almost 60 years. So I think a contract is deserving.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. We're going to move on to the next topic now. And after the game, unfortunately, it's happened again. The players on our team, and consequentially the players who missed the penalties, they've received racist abuse online. And, you know, once again, it's something that is so disappointing to hear about. David, I'll come to you first. After such a good tournament, it does feel like there is just a little bit of a dampener on it after this.
Yeah, it's disgusting. It is. I mean, first of all, you've got the scenes at Wembley of people breaking into the ground and stuff like that, which just makes you look like idiots, first and foremost. And then, I mean, this is happening too much now. It's just racist abuse all the time. Why? I don't understand it. And then, you know, you've got, as I say, it's been spoken about this morning, Boris Johnson's coming out and condemning the abuse, but then he wouldn't condemn them taking the knee to fight for injustice and racial inequality. So you've facilitated it, mate. This is what's happened. You all take a stand on it. I'm just sick of it. I'm fed up. I mean, obviously, I speak from a position where I don't experience racism, and I'm lucky, but if I'm getting fed up of it, can you imagine how the people who do experience this racist abuse are? I mean, something needs to change about it now. It really does. It's gone on for too long, and it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. Anyone who thinks it's okay to do stuff like that is just, they don't deserve to be alive. They don't.
I be honest, I completely agree with you, mate. It is absolutely shocking. Joel, come to you next. You know, David said that, you know, there has to be something done about this. What do you think could be done to try and stop, you know, racist abuse online and, you know, even on the streets towards players and people of different cultures and ethnicities?
See, that's the thing. It wouldn't be done in the streets, though, would it? Because these people are cowards that hide behind a computer screen. And I think we're in a very dangerous position here. For a few years now under Southgate, these players have shown identity and given us the things that we want, show us what they like as people, you know, getting involved in things outside of the football pitch. And they could just as easily now turn around and say, why should I do things like that when these people are abusing me for no reason? I don't want to play for these people anymore. So I think we really need to have a long, hard think of what we're doing as a nation. Silly things like that, it's just no need for it whatsoever. And they could revert back to the monotone style of footballer that we used to be used to in previous England camps. And I certainly don't want that. So please, whoever's doing it, just stop immediately.
Exactly. Once again, I completely agree. Tarrant, coming to you next. This whole tournament, it did have, you know, a great vibe to it until just last night. And it's so, so disappointing to hear about it once again. You know, what did you think of the comments that the players received?
Well, I mean, for me, I think this tournament's, you know, it's been incredible. But I think last night, you know, it was devastating for me. You know, before the game, I've never felt, you know, as a person of colour at the end of the day, you know, I've never felt more safe. I think in recent years, you don't feel that sort of passion and excitement for an England team because, you know, it's almost that underlying sense of fear that, you know, you're not welcomed or you're not seen as part of the collective. But I think in recent times, and especially this tournament, you know, you feel represented, you feel supported, you feel welcomed. I think, you know, yesterday, I've never felt more welcomed in an atmosphere for an England game in my existence, in my life. But as soon as that penalty shootout finished, you know, the entire atmosphere, the entire vibe completely changed. And I did fear, you know, I did really fear for myself and, you know, for people there as well. You know, it's sad that, you know, it goes on. And, you know, as Joe and as David have said, it's not on the streets that this happens. To some extent it is, you know, because you can feel it, you can sense it. But so much more goes on online and so much more needs to be done to stop it online. Because, you know, for me, it's you're English until you fail. And for these players, they were loved. They were adored. Sterling's done so much, you know, for this England team, this tournament. But come the end of the game yesterday, you know, they were just seen as the other at the end of the day. And it's wrong. And so much more needs to be done for that to change. And if we need to progress and we want to really win and get to the final and deserve the trophy, I think we need to address this issue before anything else. Because, you know, you don't deserve, as Joe said, you don't deserve to win a trophy. You don't deserve to be champions if this is how you treat your players in defeat.
Exactly. You know, another good few points well made. Dan, coming to you just finally on this, mate. You know, how disappointed were you when you heard about, you know, the racist abuse that our players were experiencing after the game?
Yeah, disappointed is obviously the right word. And I echo everything the lads have said, especially Tarrant at the end there. Disappointed, obviously, but how long can you be disappointed for when it happens all the time? Like, we've had this conversation on the Liverpool podcast, the Shank of the Gates, before now, and it just feels like we're having the same conversations again and again. Until something can be done, I don't think that conversation's ever going to go away, unfortunately. But like I say, disappointed, certainly, but the problem is you're just not surprised by it anymore and you expect it. And almost like Tavin alluded to there, as soon as England failed, if you like, and those penalties were missed, you almost expected it. It was inevitable that was going to happen. And that's the really sad thing. I would like to touch upon the behaviour generally, actually, of England fans yesterday. And it was pretty abhorrent from the word go, if we're going to be dead honest about it. A lot of the sort of social media stuff today, flagging it up, and journalists are being quite critical of it, and rightfully so. But a lot of the talk is the minority. But for me, I thought it was seriously poor yesterday. Fighting, throwing bottles when there's kids around. And, you know, a lot of football clubs get bad reps, but when it's England, it's deemed as it's okay. But what I seen yesterday, and, you know, people storming into Wembley, breaking down barriers to get in without tickets, and I'm pretty sure there was people in there without tickets yesterday. So let's call it for what it is. It was, for what should have been a good day and a final, England obviously lost, which was disappointing from their point of view, but it didn't look great, did it?
No, not at all. And I think at the end of the day, you do feel a bit embarrassed it's some of the way that some of the England fans have acted after being, you sound like a school teacher, you know, after being so well behaved for the whole tournament, and then they go and do this. They racially abuse our players who have done us so proud in this whole tournament. They storm into Wembley without tickets. It is absolutely embarrassing. Really, really is. And I don't really know sort of what else to say. It is just absolutely embarrassing.
Can I just jump in there 1 second? I seen a tweet today this morning saying I'd rather see another 55 years of waiting for an England trophy as long as we stamp out racism. And I think we can all agree on that one.
Definitely. You know?
100%.
Definitely can agree on that. Now, tomorrow, of course, it is the final podcast for the Euro Exposition, and it's just going to be like a nice little wrap-up for the tournament. It has been a cracking tournament until maybe after the final. We're going to be talking about player of the tournament, best moment of the tournament, goal of the tournament. So that'll be on Facebook, on all of the Facebook channels at 11 o'clock tomorrow. And of course, if you missed this episode or if you want to re-listen to any of the previous Euro Exposition podcasts, you can catch them on Spotify, on Google, or on any of your home devices. Just ask for the Euro Exposition podcast and it should be able to play it for you. But that is, of course, the end of the podcast. I just want to say a personal thank you to David for setting this all up and doing a lot of work behind the scenes, mate. You have been an absolute legend.
Thanks,
thank you. Cheers, to Alex, David, as well. You know, obviously, this wouldn't have happened without you or your help or without Alex's help. So we do really, really appreciate it, mate. You got any words to say to the viewers before we go?
Well, I prepared a speech in advance. No. Just, thanks everyone for getting involved and for watching. Yeah, it's been a dream. It's been excellent.
Of course. And we'll be going back to our club football.
We will.
For the next few months, and probably just drowning our sorrows in the Premier League and the Championship.
I've just seen Liverpool are already back in pre-season, so that means James Milner's lactate test is on the way.
Oh, man. You'll have a few cups of tea, won't you, James Milner?
Oh, why?
But honestly, thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in to these podcasts. It's been an absolute pleasure to do them all throughout the Euros. And let's hope it'll come home with Qatar, eh? But once again, thanks so much, everyone. See you later.